A very good morning to you, my dear listener. Very good morning to you, Namibia. And welcome to Eagle FM, your number one talk radio station. And thank you, David, for crossing that mic to this part of the world. We are coming to you live now from the Ondangwa studio. And welcome. Welcome, welcome, welcome. So how was your weekend? Hopefully it was a relaxing, you know, weekend, because it has been raining in some part throughout the country. I mean, some part throughout the weekend, and it's even raining this morning. So beautiful, beautiful. Such a beautiful weather this morning, and I hope that it's raining in your area as well. So, yeah, it has been even a warning. In other some part of the country, there could be some flash flooding that might taking place. And where this is taking place, make sure that you take the cautionary measures that you are being, you know, that you are being told, okay, that you are being informed. All right. Good morning. It's Monday morning, and it's the last week of the month. Is the last week of the month of February. Is the 23rd of February. The year is 2026. Well, this year is not joking. It's moving like what is that? Not like a tortoise, but it's really moving like a bullet. All right, welcome, and welcome also to Unpacking the Day. My name is Mike Oshoveri, and this is your daily dose of what really going on in terms of business news, economic news, and politics. So every weekday here, we cut through the noise to make sense of the big stories, trends, and numbers that are making headlines. So we keep it very, very, very clear, and always curious, asking the questions that matter and giving you a fresh take of what people are saying out there. So the views we shared during our segment don't necessarily reflect of those of Eagle FM. We are here to unpack what others are saying and spark a meaningful conversation so that you can be part of the bigger conversation. So this is your space to unpack the headlines and get to the heart of the stories. So, and if you're just joining us, you are right on time. So you are right on time, and thanks for joining us this very morning. Unfortunately, today we don't have much of a significant event that have taken place on this day in Africa, on the 23rd of February. It's a disappointing day. No, there are some event that happened, but not really, really significant event. So we don't have anything on this day in Africa. So let's go to our thought for the day. What is our thought for day? We probably have had this cup quite often. You can lead a horse to water, but you cannot make it drink. But you cannot make it drink. You can lead a horse to water, but you cannot make it drink. So the proverbs means you can give someone an opportunity or advice or help, but you cannot force them to take it or act on it. So the financial the final decision always belong to the person. Imagine taking a thirst horse to a river. The water is there, but the horse still actually chooses whether to drink. Now, in the same way, people decide for themselves whether to follow guidance or use the opportunity given to them. So in actual fact, in essence, the proverb emphasizes the idea that people have free will and ultimately must make their own decisions. And even if the help and the opportunity is right there in front of them. So that's our thought for the day. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. So whatever decision or choices you make, throughout the day today, make sure that you use the opportunity given to you. All right, so welcome. And our time is about 7 minutes past the hour of 8, and I will be with you until around 10 o'clock, when we'll be handing over to my colleague Mparanga Jam, Kamatian Mako Kapafi, Tate France, that will be coming with Kuthamosha around 10 o'clock. So, yeah, what do we have today on the show? Yeah, we're following a story. Namibia consume approximately 1.1 billion liters of imported petroleum product annually. And that shows a dependence that highlights a critical gap in our energy infrastructure, despite the recent crude oil discoveries. So it's a story in today's edition of The Villager. And that's a story that we are unpacking. And we will be talking to the author of the story as well, so in a short while. The other story that we would like to touch on as well, if we have time, is that there are tech analysts, you know, affirming that the nationwide, you know, transition to 4G and 5G network will significantly enhance connectivity, unlock the new economic and social opportunity for Namibians. That's another story that we're going to look at if we still have time. And of course, your participation will also be part of the show. So, as you can see, fully packed. And when we come back, we will get into our first item on the show. Well, stay tuned. We'll be back in a second.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Omutia would take Rokabuna, E. Matina, Omjo. She calls a fat and anana, longish a fat, yai, she became Moshiwana. E. Moyao, or Tango Botisamweni. Anagashifa, Yanamibia, Ombitom Banawa, Orojika. Saitanina, Omeaguro, Nidanitoma, Yue, Yongishifa, Yokupitramo, Eagle FM Media House. Gwe 23 Meha, Uka Kombanga Nina. Kara omkwashi pareki uimepo yo mo programa detu. Moambo dengera selma konarahi tatu imu. Datu ndatu heari hamano tano o niyaji. Eagle FM, the eye.
All right, good morning Namibia, and welcome back to Unpacking the Day. Well, today we are diving into an issue that is crucial to our country's future, our reliance on imported petroleum products. Now, data shows that Namibia consumes approximately 1.1 billion liters of petroleum products annually, with diesel making up 70% of that.
And while we are all excited about the recent crude oil discoveries in our waters, there is a quiet conversation happening among experts about, okay, what happened next? With no refining capacity in the country yet, this put us in a position where we might continue exporting crude oil and only to buy it back as a refined product. Now, to help us understand the situation better and unpack what this development means for Namibia, we are joined by an economist, Nino Menwavali, Angala. So he's also the author of the article that we are unpacking this morning. Nino, welcome to the show, and thanks for joining us this morning.
Yes, thank you for having me.
All right. So now, let's start with the bigger picture, okay? The bigger picture question. Now, why is Namibia reliance on imported product or imported petroleum product such a pressing issue? Why is such a pressing issue?
Yeah. The reliance is a matter of capacity and in economic development. You know, when we define economic development in our context, we always look at the building and other things. Here we mean economic sophistication.
Yeah.
Or economic complexity, ability to develop certain high-level products. Yeah, so that is why we are actually importing. So we are importing because we do not have that economic complexity.
Yeah.
To be processing our own oil, our own oil. Because remember, Africa is one of the biggest producers of crude oil.
Yeah.
So it's not a matter of that, we do not want to refine. No. It's just a matter of economic complexity that we never actually thought about it. Because remember, when you have somebody producing raw material somewhere, and you have that mental capacity, that economic complexity, you will think beyond to say that instead of sending your crude oil, send it to me so I can process it. So we are importing because we do not have the economic complexity, never thought of it. And because our economic structure has always been about exporting raw material, we never really, really had such a deep conversation about, can we do something different with this raw material which is around Africa?
Yeah.
Can crude oil be one of them? So, but many people who started from this angle to say, no, why should you build a refinery if you do not have
oil? Yeah. We're going to have a quick commercial and then we come back. Yeah?
All right.
Yeah.
When you choose UNAM,
you get credible accreditations.
You get internationally recognized qualifications.
You get a university with a growing reputation.
When you choose UNAM,
you get a head start on local jobs.
You become connected in a growing Namibia.
You stay in the best country in the world.
Because you already know you love it here.
Open your mind to UNAM.
And UNAM will open the world to you.
UNAM is your university, Namibia.
Because the U in UNAM is you.
All right, the U in UNAM is you. Okay, welcome back. Yeah, now, quickly, just we are importing about 1.1 billion liters of refined petroleum annually. What does this mean for Namibia's economic independence? What does it mean for our economic independence?
Yeah, like I was saying, that it's all about economic complexity. And this economic complexity is actually, we are questioning the leaders that we have.
Yeah.
And also the thinking of African economic advices or economic architectures.
Yeah.
Like my last friend was saying that somebody will call and say that, no, why should Namibia develop a refinery? If it does not produce oil, then the point will be, if you look at now South Korea, if you look at Japan, they have mines? They don't.
Yeah.
But what they have is a certain mindset or an economic complexity that their leaders were looking at economic opportunities that they can do within their country regardless of what they have. So a refinery, we never thought about it, but we have been closer to Angola.
Mm.
So the context of why are we importing is because we never thought of building a refinery because of our understanding of economic building.
Yeah.
So yes, the independence or our ability to be so self-reliant is determined by the petroleum matters that we import.
Mm.
Because if you look at the 70% of what we are importing, 70% of what we are importing is actually diesel.
Diesel, yeah.
And it, and this is not just for vehicles. It's also for the industry.
Mm.
It's for the agriculture sector. So your economic independence or your ability to do greater things always going to be determined by your consumption of diesel, because your machinery, your equipment, all of them are running on diesel. So our economic independence is definitely affected, and our ability to do whatever we want is always going to be affected,
yeah,
because we need diesel. Like now, this issue of Iran, or Iran, however you pronounce it, and the threatening to close that route to the Middle East,
yeah,
oil supply, it is definitely going to, we are shaking because we depend our, we go to Oman, we go to Qatar, we go to Indonesia, that's how we get our refined product.
Mm.
So it affects our independence definitely in terms of how we want to move and the geopolitics around the world.
Yeah. Now, with all the recent excitement about now oil discovery, many people, maybe rightly or wrongly, many people assume we will be energy secured. Are we getting ahead of ourselves?
It's not really getting ahead of ourselves. It's the understanding that there's a difference between crude oil and refined petroleum product.
Yeah.
So once we distinguish between the two, then our excitement can have levels. So we discovered that there are some light, beautiful oil under our ocean.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, no matter how light it is, it's still not consumable at the level where we consume the petroleum product.
Like that we consume now, yeah.
Yeah, we consume refined petroleum product. But when the oil is coming from the ground, it's called crude.
Mm.
So it needed to be refined to a certain level for it to be consumed in our equipment, in our vehicles. So the excitement now is divided in two parts.
Mm.
Many of us or those who have vehicles are excited thinking that the oil is going to be cheaper.
Yeah.
While the second group like us who do not have vehicles, we are excited because we are going to get more revenue from the oil.
Yeah.
The second group is right. When we are going to export our crude oil because we do not have a refinery, we're going to get money. This is what Angola is doing. This is what Nigeria has been doing. This is what Niger is doing. All of them, they get money from exporting crude oil.
Yeah.
But the second group is the one that we need to warn that, please, lower your expectation in terms of the price of oil going down. Because that crude is not coming inside Namibia, it will end at the port and or even go straight in a ship to where it's supposed to be refined.
Mm.
So the only way the prices of petroleum products are going to go lower in Namibia, only if government use that revenue from the sale of crude oil and subsidize the prices, like what Angola is doing.
Okay.
That is only when the prices will go down, but not straight, because we are going to produce crude, and we do not consume crude internally. So that decision, that's what I'm saying, we have, for those who are owning vehicles, they have to lower their excitement.
Yeah.
Because there is no benefit associated with this currently unless government use the revenue from the oil to subsidize the prices of petroleum products, like what Angola is doing. But for now, there is no such decision.
Yeah.
All we can be excited about is that, yes, we are going to produce crude oil by 2030, employment is going to come, a spillover effect, depending on our local procurement. But until then, that is the only thing. So
would have that been different if we have a refinery, for example?
Of course, the benefit will be twofold, like I told you. Like, okay, we are going to get the income.
Yeah.
Because remember, look at this value chain. These wells are like, if I'm not mistaken, it's 200 kilometers in our ocean.
Yeah.
So there is going to be that transportation from that 200 kilometer to the port. Then there is going to be that storage. Then from that storage of crude, some trucks or a pipe is going to be built to a refinery.
Mm.
And when you are refining, you are creating product, and as soon as you refine, you export, I mean, you transport within the country or to other countries. Look at the income.
Mm.
But now, when you're only producing crude, from crude, either you store and you put into the ship straight to Indonesia or to Qatar, or to USA where they have refinery, or to Nigeria, Dangote.
Yeah.
You see, there is no, the value chain becomes shorter. And when the shorter the value chain, the lesser the income you get from something. But when you extend it from the storage of crude to another pipeline, taking it to the refinery, from the refinery to transport it, look at how long the value chain is.
Yeah.
And at every stop of that value chain, there are people working, there are machinery being used, there are utility being used, there are service being rendered.
Mm-hmm.
So the longer the value chain, the more the jobs, the more the money, the more the benefit.
Yeah.
That is now why economic complexity is very, very important. Because when you have that complexity, the ability to go beyond the first step, taking that from the ground and storing it, and then you go further to process it, then you go further to transport it, then you actually try to produce different. If you look at the type of petroleum product we are consuming, there are a lot.
Yeah,
there are a lot.
Yeah.
We can even go and extend even to jet fuel, you know. So it's a lot of products. So the more you extend the value chain, the more the benefit, the more the money, the more the wealth. Because the spillover effect of the service is going to be rendered in the people that are going to be employed. That's why our conversation about the processing is so narrow. It's very now everybody's saying, no, let's add value. No, you have to extend the value chain. Process and produce different products. Educate yourself, capacitate yourself, think innovatively. That's what I'm saying at my first answer, to say, we are questioning our architectures of economy, of the economy. What is their thinking? Because every direction that we go, every decision that we make about extending the value chain, it depends on the people who sit at the table, who plan our economic development, who are drafting our blueprint. But if their economic complexity is so narrow that they just want crude and the money from crude, then we will not go further. So it's really, really, really high level thinking at the people who are planning the economy in the direction of the country.
Yeah, but when we often, when we look at the approach that we use at the moment, we often export our minerals in a raw form and then buy back the finished product. When you look at how we're handling this, is the oil industry setting up for the same cycle? Are we setting up for the same cycle?
Yeah, and that's now actually the most beautiful thing. And I'm going to go back again to say, if now those who are planning the economy, national planning, Minister of Finance, Bank of Namibia, those who advise the president, if they are not careful enough, they are going to repeat the same cycle.
Yeah.
Look, I'm an outsider from the president. I don't sit at our table. So the direction in we are going to get, look, Shell, you cannot call Shell or Total to refine. They will tell you, no, all I do is extract oil.
Yeah.
That is the sector I participate in. And this is one of the most beautiful answers I got in all my years. We met the Chamber of Mine one day, and we brought up the case of that, why are we not processing?
Yeah.
And this is what Atemalango told us. These are miners. If you want to process your minerals, get investment for the full process.
Yeah, yeah.
So you cannot be here asking Total or Shell to build their refinery. No, their sector where they participate is extracting. So now, if the mindset of the people who do your economic planning are not learning from the past, are not learning from the current status, we will be extracting the crude.
We will store it and we will put it in a ship and send it to Indonesia, send it to USA. Mm. And we are doing the same thing with fish.
Yeah.
You know, we have weight and whatever, right?
Yeah.
There are those fish that we catch straight and we put in a box and we send to Spain straight.
Yeah.
So we can repeat the same thing with crude if those who are planning our economy are not thinking differently, are not learning, are not even observing. I think it's no more about learning. It's literally just being different, because there is a difference talking about the processing and understanding it. And if those who are planning the economy only talking about the processing and adding value, but they do not understand it, the complexity of it and what needs to be done, then there is nothing which is going to be changing.
Exactly, the complexity that you talk about. So, because what would it take for Namibia really to start refining its own oil instead of continuing to import? And it's the same question with other minerals. You know, what would it take for Namibia to do that?
Look, I keep saying this word. It only takes audacity. I'm not going to say a lot of things. It only requires audacity.
Yeah.
And that audacity now is so complex, perhaps. You need to break it down. What is that audacity? National planning need to start talking big. National planning need to stop giving speeches to us. Once national planning start having that, I don't want to say a bad word, like be a buffalo to say, this is the direction.
Yeah.
Then it is not that we need to go to heaven and come back. No, we just need to decide. We are going to process. And when we're going to process, we have an agreement with South Korea that once we process this product to this level, they're going to buy.
Yeah.
When we are going to process our crude, we have an agreement already with Zambia to take a 20%. And this is what is going to be required. The land is available already in under special economic zone. Minister of Finance, we want us to look at the physical ability for you to be able to lower taxes on this side to enable these guys to work.
Yeah.
You NumPower, we want you to be able to generate this electricity at this level for this guy to be able to do this. That is the audacity, bringing all the necessary parts and institutions that are called enablers.
Yeah.
Once you mobilize all of them that this is the direction, no negotiation, no what, that we are going to process the crude oil.
Yeah.
We are going to make it possible. We're going to get a loan. We're going to pay it like this. Let me give you another example. When we built the storage, it's about the willing, the oil storage.
Yeah.
We were struggling to pay that loan.
We have another commercial quickly, and we're going to come back. All right.
Great news. Import just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Okay, welcome back. Yeah, now just let's continue. We're looking at what it takes, what would it take for Namibia to start refining its own oil instead of continuing to import. Yeah.
Yeah, I was saying it's the audacity and the ability to mobilize the relevant institutions that are called enablers.
Yeah.
When we got the loan to build the storage, everybody was making noise. And we were even struggling to pay the loan. Do you know what somebody, some smart guy, not even smart, just thing, he just said, okay, since we are struggling to pay, we can just actually put a levy on fuel again.
Yeah.
Because fuel is inelastic. The demand for fuel is inelastic. So we put the levy there. That's how now we are paying for the storage. And I remember even when we were starting, I asked at Ireland that, why can't you build a refinery, my G? Why are you building a storage? No. You see? So it's the thinking, is the audacity and the willingness to do. This is nothing to do that we are not capable. It's just that we do not have the audacity to decide.
Mm.
It's not that the Shell does not want. No, Shell will supply you the oil. All you do is just to get your investors, your local investors, and be willing to provide this, what is necessary.
Yeah.
Look, right now we have different people in government. And in Ministry of Finance, you have certain people. In NAMRA, you have certain people. In National Planning, you have certain people. Now, many of these colleagues, if they are not builders,
yeah.
I want you to understand this, if they are not architects, we are not going to build anything. There is a difference between an implementer and a builder.
Mm.
There is a difference between people who draw up plans and implementers. Now, when the people who are drawing up the building plan, the foundation of the economy, have no audacity, or they are not thinking differently,
yeah.
We will not go anywhere. So it's not going to be about NAMRA or the president or what. No, it's the architects, the people who draw up the foundation that this is the foundation we're going to stand on.
Yeah.
Because those are the people who, those are the heart. The blood flow from the heart, right?
Mm.
Now, if the heart itself is weak, what do you expect? So the main issue about the processing and value addition, we are going back to the architectures of our economic structure. Who are they? What is their thinking? Can we change them? Can we remove them? Can we infuse some new blood?
Mm.
Because
yeah.
Once they tell us the foundation, NAMRA will align, Minister of Finance will align, Minister of Works will align. It's all about aligning to support the foundation, because everything is going to be built on the foundation. But if the architecture, the whole drawing plan, it's all about long speeches. No. We will not refine crude.
Yeah.
We will not refine crude.
Yeah. Yeah. You just mentioned, you know, if the blood from the heart is weak, it's, you know, nothing is that's going to happen. So the national dialogue, it doesn't seem to include any focus on refining. Why do you think that is the case?
What are the media writing about?
Mm.
The dialogue is shaped by the media. The dialogue is shaped by the journalists we have. The dialogue is shaped by the people who have access to TV. If you are giving people, if you are giving audience to the people who have no understanding of economic building,
yeah.
What do you expect? Yeah. The national dialogue is shaped by the type of journalists that you have. The national dialogue is shaped by the people who give audience every day.
Hmm.
Look at the headlines. Look at the headline. Nobody's talking about the refinery. Nobody's even questioning the benefit. Nobody. Yeah. It means if the people who are supposed to communicate to the public and shape the dialogue also are weak, I don't want to call them weak. They just do not understand the economic complexity and
yeah.
What is required.
Yeah.
And I'm not insulting anybody. We have a lot of educated, useless people. I'm sorry to say that.
Yeah.
So, and when I keep saying that, it's not because I'm the most educated person. No. The uselessness of our educated people is that they are educated on things that have nothing to do with the direction they want to go.
Mm.
They are not. So the media itself, the people with audience to the media themselves, are the only ones shaping the national dialogue. Nobody's
yeah.
questioning Angola proposal to our cabinet. Until now, cabinet did not even say anything. Angola gave you a piece. And what did you do? Now you are talking about Botswana building a storage. You see, look at how confusing it is. Dude, you are building a storage
yeah.
while you are mining crude. What are you going to store? So it means you are still going to go to Singapore, Indonesia, Qatar, and Oman
yeah.
to buy the refined product and come and store it.
Mm.
So meaning, here you are producing the crude, you send it, and you're going back to go get it. The same structure economy is now. But
yeah.
now saying, okay, instead of a storage, colleagues, what can we do? You now, what can you produce for us? Next, what can you produce for us? Minister of Finance, what can you provide for us to make the refinery possible?
Yeah.
You were able to invite Dangote here. Invite Dangote again and ask him, can you give us the case study? What does it take to build a refinery? What are the risks? What is that is required from us to do?
Mm.
So So it's asking those difficult questions and actually making sure that the people that you allow to talk publicly have the audacity because they shake the national dialogue. But if your colleagues keep recycling people, look at the interviews that we do in Namibia, the same people, look at our committee that we are forming, the same people.
Yeah.
Then how do you expect a different mindset and a different direction and audacity? If you have the same people in panel discussion, you have the same people on TV being interviewed, no audacity, none of them. They are all blaming the government. That is the whole idea that we have. If you look, I'm telling you, look at our own discussion about the budget. They're going to look at, no, Namibian, I mean, the government is a lot of employees, the debt, the same things. The same thing. Nobody's looking at the utilization. Nobody's looking at the effectiveness. Nobody's looking at the efficiency of the dollar. Nobody's looking at where the dollar is going. So the national dialogue that is going to be shaped by the people you give access to the media. It's going to be shaped by the type of journalists you have. It's going to be shaped by the type of media that you have. All our media, I don't want to say bad things, but they shape the national dialogue.
Yeah, no, we definitely. And the other things that you mentioned, it's the building of the storage, of the oil storage. It looks as if it's also underlying the short-sighted of our national goals, you know, knowing that we are busy now with the exploration of the discovery of oil. Why would we still then put up a facility like that instead of which you probably not going to use it in that way? And the other thing that I want to put, maybe I want to ask you is why does Namibia need to work with private oil marketing companies to meet its fuel demand? Why can't we just, because if we have already the national, let's say for example, we have built the storage, why can't we go to Qatar or to Iran and directly get this petrol and then we put it in our storage? Why do we have to use, to have the private oil marketing companies?
Those are very two questions, but I'm going to go back to the first one.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a fan of knowledge cutting. Let me just tell you that, not because, for some crazy reason, guys, cutting is the audacity.
Yeah.
That is a visionary. Look, if Tata Lwembe and his team could have just listened, look, it was said a long time ago that there is some oil, and only Katu believed it.
Yeah.
Man, that dude. We look, and this is the funny thing about Namibian. We do not appreciate people who have a vision. That dude has a vision.
Yeah.
That dude has an audacity. He took one of the greatest risks.
And we don't support them. Yeah.
We don't support him.
Yeah.
And guess what? We still went ahead and built the storage when people were saying that there is oil under. And I'm going to say this until I'm gone. The people who are advising Tata Lwembe at that time and cabinet, they are the people we need to blame. Maybe. Here you have information that there is oil under your ocean. And there is a gentleman in your country who bought EPL. This dude is just so visionary. You're supposed to call him at the table and have a conversation.
Yeah.
Do you really, really believe there is oil before you go ahead and build the storage? So look at how contradictory it is.
Here
you are being told there is oil, there is crude under your ocean. Then you go ahead and build the storage. So you see how conflicting and how people who are advising government are not paying attention. And they lack audacity.
Yeah.
So now we are questioning Kati for believing. We are questioning Kati for having the audacity. We are questioning Kati for taking the risk a long time ago. So we need our advisors to pay attention to the current trend.
Yeah.
We need our advisors to be able to be well capacitated to take risk, to calculate and to do assessment, to advise government. So that is one of the weaknesses that we have.
Yeah.
Now, to your last question.
Yeah.
We built NAMCO for that. We built Namco. We invested in Namco. We could have capacitated Namco to be able to be competitive. And I remember Namco even went to government and said, give me 50% mandate to be the one importing the oil in the country. Guess what we did? We went to competition commission, we blocked it, we are giving Namco so much power.
Yeah.
No, it's uncompetitive. Oh my goodness. We have so many educated people, my God. You know that most of these things are blocked by the educated people.
Yeah.
But if you go to Saudi Arabia, who own the oil company? If you go to United Arab Emirates, who own the oil? If you go to Qatar, who own the oil?
Hmm.
But here we have the educated sellers and ladies. Ah, it's uncompetitive. Namco cannot be given. Guess what? Somebody told me that during the presentation last week at the National Competition Commission, that you cannot import and store at the port unless you are importing a certain volume for it to be feasible. Only those, that's why right now, probably only two companies that are importing are full. And probably Vivo and they said, why? Because they're able to command the ship with a certain volume and saw it.
Yeah.
And Namco was asking the same thing. That give me this mandate to be able to do it.
Yeah.
Now guess what? At the storage, we have three companies, if I'm not mistaken, that they have storage at the port. Our national storage, Vivo and I think Puma and others.
Yeah.
But only probably two are importing because they need to import a certain volume to make it commercial viable.
Yeah.
So what competition did we actually stop and be competitive if still only two companies are importing at the bulk level? And guess what? It's the educated people who stopped it.
Mm.
But what did they stop? If still only two companies that are importing the oil. So these are the type of question you ask yourself, that when I keep blaming the educated people, that they are the problematic.
Yeah.
Because they lack the foresight and the vision.
Yeah.
They lack the foresight and the vision. They fought. They went to competition commission. Now guess what? What Namco wanted to do is now being done probably by two companies. So which anti-competitive behavior was it?
Yeah.
They are stopping. Now, on your question, it's because we stopped ourselves to do it. We could have gone to Indonesia. By now, if you give Namco 50% mandate, it will make it even commercial viable for them even to buy a vessel.
Exactly, yeah. Mm.
It makes sense. That's why I tell people, there are certain conditions that will make a transaction commercial viable. So before you go on and say it's anti-competitive, we are giving them too much. No. Go to the numbers. It will only make commercial sense for me to go in a certain transaction if a certain things are in order. And this is why the USA, this is why the British, this is why the Chinese support their big company to expand, because they know it will only make financial sense if they get this type of support. Otherwise, they won't grow. Here in Namibia, they educated the people who make a lot of noise. They will write articles. They will... And guess what? We are here now.
Yeah, then a better question on a national energy policy of the 2017, as the guiding document. Is it doing enough to ensure energy security for, let's say, for next 20 years? Is it doing enough?
It depends on your definition of energy security.
Yeah.
It depends on their definition of energy security. If energy security means the dealers, okay, because we have now three groups, the importing, the distributors, and the dealers. Energy security to in a narrow context is that those people who are doing it are paid, they are marginal, well, very little. There is energy security.
Yeah.
Because if you don't give them the better margins, they will not supply. But if you expand it, energy security means going crazy to have a foresight of where things are going. Look, even if we are not going to use
petroleum in the next 20 years.
Yeah.
Our agricultural machinery will always going to need diesel.
Mm.
And you know that our backup electricity generation, Anikas and others, they use heavy fuel. And you know what? We imported that heavy fuel.
Yeah.
So energy security is about context and tomorrow and understanding your economy and where you want to go. It's not about the making people who are importing and those who are dealing to give them better margin to convince them to keep supplying. No, but actually coming up with better different alternative to make sure when the prices or international prices go up,
yeah,
you are secure for the next 4 months. Because guess what? As soon as USA attack Iran, the price of fuel for the next month go up. There's no cushion. There is nothing. And energy security is what? Energy security is about the ability to cushion yourself when such type of things are happening.
Mm.
But now we don't. Even your own storage is unable to cushion yourself because every month you are changing price. If the storage was doing its job like we were told by that Alenda, that we will go 3 months of full capacity.
Yeah.
That it will cushion us from price changing in the national market. It's not. And that is not energy security. So it's all about context and the context of the people who are sitting at the table.
Yeah. Now, when we look at this whole complex, what role should the government actually play in the oil sector? Should they be more involved in actual extraction and processing or just regulate it? What role government should play in this sector?
We did very well by creating NAMCO.
Yeah.
Give NAMCO power. Commercial power.
Mm.
Balance sheet power. Capital power. That is it. Support your own institution. Now you are just looking for control and oversight to companies that you... Yeah, no? And there's something. Look, I want everyone to go listen to the presentation of Swart Boy in Parliament.
Yeah.
That was beautiful. Because you are changing the law, but there is just nothing about yourself.
Yeah.
Your participation. There is nothing. All you want is to control. Let me give you an example. The uranium mines, they will tell you they did not make a profit, but they send the uranium to China.
Mm.
There is nothing you can do. And it's the same thing Total is going to do. I'm not saying they're going to do it. I'm just giving an example that Total will tell you that the cost of extracting this, there's so much gas, there's so much this, what will you do? No matter whatever oversight you provide, if you are not covering the cost, you have no power.
Yeah.
You have limited power. So you can be the best at oversight and whatever, but if you're not involved in the operational matters, it's limited.
Yeah.
So that's why giving NAMCO some sort of power to participate at a certain level of the value chain, that is true power. You can regulate as you want. Even no way that you guys keep talking about, no way is participating fully in the sector.
Yeah.
They started their own company. But guess what? Here you are being told, no. True power is participating, putting in the capital, understanding the operational. Because remember, you have people that are educated within the sector that you call oil expert and petroleum expert.
Yeah.
But they are sitting in the office, my dear. They are not there in the rig. They are not there in the rig.
Yeah.
You can be providing oversight all you want. But participating at a certain value chain is critical. We are not saying that the government should go on the rig. But you created an institution that have educated the people, capacitated, give it a muscle.
Hmm.
If we are to derive so much value from this product, we have to participate. We have to participate at a certain level. We have to participate at a certain level. Not just about oversight and the regulation.
Yeah.
Yes, regulation are okay. Create the environment. But you are creating only the environment for others and not for your own people.
Yeah. Just going back to the storage, given that fuel is mostly imported, does Namibia have enough storage? And the other part is that do we have transportation capacity to meet the future demand?
No. Look, the market always reacts. Like I said, our storage is supposed to cover for 3 months of Namibia demand or Namibia requirements.
Yeah.
3 months. If it's full to capacity, 3 months. And that is big. That is big enough.
Yeah.
And remember, we are not only even supplying Namibia, we are also supplying Botswana to a certain extent.
Yeah.
So in terms of storage, for now, we are okay. And we can always expand it anyway.
Mm.
We can always, but my issue is that we cannot be expanding something that is being refined somewhere.
Yeah.
Because if you do a commercial comparison, where will you get more money? Is it storing somebody that has been processed by somebody?
Yeah.
Or will you get more money if you start processing yourself and storing?
Mm.
Where will you get more money? So it's all about the cost and the value you derive and the utility you derive from something. And
yeah,
in terms of transportation, look, the market reacts. If there is such a need, the transport companies will go in. In terms of transportation, I think we are secure.
Yeah.
And we can always go in.
Yeah.
We can always go in. We never really, I never experienced something where we have been told the oil didn't come because of transportation. No.
Yeah.
No. It's only because in terms of importing.
But the other thing is that we rely heavily on the road transport for fuel distribution. How much does that actually, that reliance on trucks versus maybe rail drive up the cost?
Yeah. Indeed. But that is just, that problem is solvable.
Mm.
Yeah, Trans-Namib. It's like that. Just keep playing the dilly-dally with Trans-Namib like it's a baby. Fire everyone. There he is. Look, Trans-Namib can play a key role.
Yeah.
We built the infrastructure from here to Oshkango. We are talking about now taking it from Kroonstad to Zambezi. And you know the most interesting thing? When people are saying this thing, when you are building the railway and if the rail facilitator or the rail and whatever you call him is not functioning, how do they rationalize? Like, I want to meet at an Ekundi, like, when you are now telling us from Kroonstad to Zambezi, who is going to operate it?
Yeah.
Like, we need to ask at an Ekundi that before you put a dollar on that rail, make Trans-Namib functional. Otherwise, we, the people of Namibia, are going to sue you.
Yeah.
Because you guys are wasting resources. You already built the one from Tumebu to the north, and it's not being utilized.
Mm.
Please do not waste more money for the Namibian people until you make it Trans-Namib commercial, functional. But the Namibian people do not, are not having this conversation.
Yeah.
They are not. So, unfortunately, we are going to spend more money to build another one while the Trans-Namib is not functional. They are still operating their heavy diesel that...
you all have them like ghost towns and whatever things, and they are not being used at all, you know?
Yeah,
so,
almost every day they fell from the rail.
Mm. Now looking
at... they go to Katsima.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now looking at with now the 2030 oil production target is looming. I mean, 2030 is just about a few years ago. I mean, few years to 4 years actually before 2030. So, what should be our first step right now, really, when it comes to this?
Participation.
Yeah.
Participation. Let us look at the value chain. Where can we participate? Who can participate here? That's what I'm saying. What is what boy said supposed to be paid attention to? That we should not focus on where do we move the department, we should go there.
Mm.
We should actually sit down. Where will we participate?
Yeah.
I keep telling people that the people who drew up the green hydrogen strategy, those people were thinking. If you go through it, these people are like, yeah, man, that's beautiful work in terms of participation.
Mm.
We should do the same strategy for oil and gas. That where can we participate? Who can we capacitate? Who will we give bursary? Right now, are there any bursary for oil and gas?
Yeah.
No. Look at what the green hydrogen people did. People have been sent to Germany, people have been what? But in terms of the oil and gas, no, we wanted to control the department. No, we should have a strategy about participation.
Yeah.
About getting the right capital, about getting the right skill, about filling the gaps, about transforming transnamming to transport the oil salmon. We need about expanding Nampol.
Mm.
If you look at Nampol, if you look at the Kanime plan, he already even gave them land that when you're going to get your oil, is the land. Let us look at what the Kanime is doing at Nampol.
Mm.
And we should do it at a country level in terms of participation.
Yeah.
Then you said otherwise, regulatory, it doesn't pay. No, ready yourself commercially, skill-wise, capital-wise, infrastructure-wise. That is how you're going to derive more value.
Yeah. Now, looking at the bigger picture now, probably your last word in this, how can Namibia ensure that this upcoming oil boom, as they say, actually benefit the average citizen, you know, the ordinary citizen, rather than just the oil companies as we see in some other countries?
Yeah, the one, the best question. And I already answered that question to say there is two ways.
Yeah.
And it's good if we benefit in two ways. I mean, in three ways. First of all, participation in terms of our local contractors.
Mm.
Can we skill them? Can we capacitate them? Can they have access to capital? That is the first one. When you have your local contractors doing the work, that is the first benefit. Then the second one is the revenue you're going to sell the crude.
Mm.
The revenue you're going to sell the crude. But that one, yeah, I'm for the first one and for the third one.
Yeah.
Then the third one is that, yes, the price of oil should go down.
Yeah.
That is the trickle-down effect. So we subsidize the price of petroleum, or we can refine and everybody benefits. And you know that when you refine, the farm is going to get cheaper diesel. The truck driver is going, the truck operators are going to get cheaper fuel. Everyone gets the cheaper input. Petroleum is like electricity. It's one of the most input into production. It actually affects inflation. Inflation is mostly driven by fuel costs.
Yeah.
Even if you go to agricultural inflation, it's the same thing. And that is one of the biggest beneficiaries to every Namibian, whether you are participating or not. But if you are just going to sell crude, the benefit is limited. But if you sell a refinery, almost everyone. So those are the three ways. And we guess what? It's not going to happen by mistake or by guess. We have to be proactive to make it happen.
Mm.
By now, we're supposed to be talking to our commercial banks, by to DBN, prepare some funds for our contractors to participate.
Mm.
We are now talking to the VTC to train them how to, but to work in a rig. We are already talking to UNAM. We are talking to IUM.
Yeah.
So it has to be proactive effort, not only meeting at State House and negotiating the deal. No, that does not lead to maximum value.
Yeah. So with the article in today's edition of the Villager, what is that you're trying to communicate to your reader about this issue?
Like I said, it's the media that shapes the dialogue.
Yeah.
And if nobody is actually talking about this thing, the dialogue will not happen. We're just trying to communicate, guys, that this is what we have right now. And we can actually do something about it. You know that it was only mentioned twice that Namibia discovered oil.
Mm.
Because we do not want to be speculative. But you are given the picture of the current status. Why? You will not make a decision about tomorrow if you do not know your current status.
Yeah.
Your current status is this. We import 1.1 or more than that. This is, and the whole value chain is beautiful. You have the importers and the transporters and the storage and the suppliers and the dealers. So the value chain is well established.
Mm.
Now what is key? How many of your people are participating? How can you make them to participate? And if we happen to be the one producing, how do we expand that value chain?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nino, thank you so much for taking the time to unpack this crucial, crucial issue for our listeners. And it has been really a very enlightening conversation. And thanks for your time again.
All right, sir. You're welcome.
All right.
Yes, that was Nino Menmavali, Hangala. If you want to get more information on the article that we were unpacking, you'll find it in today's edition of the Villager, and many more other very interesting and informative article in today's edition of the Villager. So, well, the National Dialogue, as he said, is dictated by, you know, by the media, by you. And if you're not only the media, and maybe civil societies, and you know, everyone. So, and if you're not participating, then we won't be able to discuss this kind of very important topics and necessary, you know. So our telephone number, the line is open now. You can come through as well and have your say. Maybe there are certain things that you yourself want to address or talk about, or even maybe just to, you know, disagree on certain things. 0833. We're coming from you, from Ondangwa Studio, 0833-66091. So do come through and have your reaction to the discussion so far.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional, and church events. And basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Yeah, that's very true. This is your number one talk radio station. And wherever you are, if you want to remain connected to your favorite station, make sure that you download the Eagle FM app, the Eagle FM app, a mobile app. And then you don't go through all those hassles and, you know, and inconvenience. You have it with you wherever you are. So whether in or outside the country, you are connected to your favorite station in the land. So good morning and welcome. So, yeah, I just had a conversation with Nino Menmavali and on the oil, as it has become a very common topic in the country at the moment. Yeah, so... from my interview with Nino Menmavali, we talked about, you know, Namibia's oil discovery and the fact that we are about to pump, you know, crude oil without any plans to refine it. So, and any other issues, you know, that we have covered. So what is your reaction to that? What I did also, I went to look for, and this information from the World Bank, from IMF, from, you know, Energy Chamber, African Energy Chamber, it's from the WTO. So I went and look for information from other countries, and in the way to look at what can we learn from other African countries, especially other African countries, what can we learn from them when it comes to oil? Because here's the thing, man. No, we are not the first. Okay, we are not the first African to discover oil. So far from it. So we have decades of examples to learn from. And some are inspiring, some are cautionary, you know, some are lessons that are very cautionary, you know, caution you, this is not what to do. And some are really downright tragic, okay? And it's better to really go through. You're most welcome to come through anytime, okay? I'm going to go through some of these examples of these countries, you know, especially on the continent, to look at the examples and learn from what can we learn from those examples. So our telephone number, you still can come through. Our telephone number is 0833-66-091. It's a Monday morning. So you're most welcome. Hopefully you had a very restful weekend and you're ready for the week, you know, and hopefully you will have a productive week ahead. All right. So, yeah, let's get into. So what we're going to do, we're going to take a tour, okay? We're going to take a tour across our continent. We're going to take a tour across our continent and ask ourselves, what did they get right? Okay? So what did this country got right? What did they get wrong? And maybe most importantly, what lesson can we take into our oil future? Now, we're looking at our oil future. What lesson can we take from that country into our oil future? So because we need to look at all this, what other countries have done, what have they done right? What have they get right? What have they get wrong, and what can we learn from that moving forward with our own oil future? So let's start with an interesting story of Equatorial Guinea. The Equatorial Guinea, a small country, massive oil discovery in the 1990s. And the production took off, and suddenly this tiny nation was swimming in oil revenue. So billions of dollars flowing in. And when you look on paper, you know, Equatorial Guinea should be an African success story. It should be an African success story. They are higher GDP per capita, one of the highest on the continent. One of the highest GDP, higher GDP per capita on the continent. But the reality on the ground is totally different. The reality on the ground itself, some of the things that we have been talking about, most citizens live in poverty. Infrastructure is crumbling in many areas. And healthcare and education are severely underfunded. Those are some social programs within the country that are underfunded. So where did all the oil money go? You know, where did all the oil money go? So, and this is some of the warnings that some experts are talking about, that it doesn't mean, well, prosperity. Not necessarily. It doesn't translate into prosperity like that. So the answer to where did all that oil actually, oil money went or go, the answer is very painful. Very, very, very painful. Because in Equatorial Guinea, a tiny elite captured virtually all the wealth. And if you follow the news as well, I think the president's son, the president's son we are talking about, was a government minister, right? Was a government minister, and was famous for his collection of luxury cars, you know, private jets, and a lot of mention across the world. Now we're talking about cars like Bugattis, Ferraris, those kind of cars, and properties worth hundreds and hundreds of millions. So, as I said, where did the money go? As I said, the answer is really painful. It's painful because a small elite of captured, you know, virtually the wealth, the oil wealth. And meanwhile, the ordinary people in Equatorial Guinea struggle with basic services. You know, there are those who live in luxuries, as I said, having luxury cars anywhere in the world and having mansion across the world. But the people are relinquishing in poverty and struggle with basic services. So, and this is not just about inequality. This is what happens when there's no transparency. Okay? When there's no transparency, there's no accountability, no democratic mechanism to ensure oil wealth benefit the population. So the lesson number one from Equatorial Guinea is that without transparency and institutional safeguard, maybe something that has been discussed in our parliament, is about institutional safeguard. So if you move the oversight to the president's office, where is the institutional safeguard? So now, without transparency and institutional safeguard, oil wealth concentrate in a very few hands. But you can also look at from the other side of the president's office as well to say, well, the reasons why doing this is because of the accountability, is because of the transparency that we want to establish. So you can also look at from that point of view as well. So, yeah. And so the thing is that it doesn't, you know, because of then without the transparency and the institutional safeguard, the oil wealth concentrate in a very few hands. It doesn't trickle down. It doesn't go down to the people that it doesn't go to the wealth benefit. It doesn't benefit the population. It doesn't transform the economy. It enriches a small circle while the majority actually see nothing at all. So that's one thing that we can learn from Equatorial Guinea. Now, let me tell you about a different story. Now, this is a different one, Botswana. Well, wait. You are saying Botswana doesn't have oil. Yeah, you're right. Botswana, it doesn't have oil. Yes. They have diamonds. Okay, we still talk about oil, but they have diamonds. But what I want to focus on is that, and I want you to stay with me on this, because the principle are identical. Okay, here I just want to highlight, you know, that the principle are identical. When Botswana discovered diamonds after independence, the leader made a critical decision that transformed the country. So they made that critical decision. Now, They negotiated, the reason why I bring it here is because they negotiated a fair deals with mining companies. Something that many countries haven't done. 50-50 partnership that kept significant value in the country. 50-50, a partnership. So they created the Pula Fund, the Fula Fund, a sovereign wealth fund that actually invests diamond revenues for future generation. So they invested heavily in education, healthcare, and infrastructure. This is now the opposite of what we're talking about with Equatorial Guinea. So they maintain democratic institution and relatively low corruption. Of course, there are still some corruption. But a relatively low corruption, you know. So many SADC countries, you know, many SADC countries have reasonable, relatively low corruption. How would I put it? You know, in countries in Southern Africa. So, but here is now the result. Botswana went from one of the poorest countries at independence to an upper middle income country today. You see the trajectory, you know, from one of the poorest country at independence to a middle to upper middle income country today. Well, not perfect. We're not talking about a perfect country here. We're talking about they have the challenges. We're talking about inequality issues. But fundamentally, they use natural resources, wealth, to build a functional state and improve living standard broadly. Okay? Broadly. So there's still other people that that are poor and all that. So, but broadly, it improved the living standard of their people. Now, the lesson that we can learn from this. Why does this do this to me? All right. Just stay tuned. I have some technical thing on a personal something that just make my thing disappear, and it has to restart again. All right, just hold on, just keep on hold on until this is fixed, and it's gonna take some time. But you are also most welcome to come through. And
Anageshefa ya Namibia ombitombwa na wa olonjika. Seithani na omayakudo mirandithoma yoe yongeshefa yoe kupitira mo Eagle FM Media House. Ngoe tuende tuimemeha uka kombanga nena. Kara omkwashipareki uimepo yomo programa detu. Moambo dengira selma konarahita tuimu. Ndatu heari hamano tano oniyaji. Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
No matter. All right, welcome back. While I'm still waiting my, you know, to fix my stuff here, my technical stuff here. So, you're most welcome to come through our telephone number if you would like to actually contribute on the earlier discussion that I have with Nino Ninavali. You're most welcome, our telephone number, and we're coming to you live from the Ondangwa studio. So our telephone number is 08333 66091. So yeah, what do you think? What are you take overall? Sometimes these days things don't I don't know what is happening to me. So maybe I need to go to some kind of a voodoo or some, you know, those people who look at people. What is going on with you? What I wanted to do also is to have a random call. I wanted to have a random call this morning. Just call up anybody in my contact and ask them, what do you think about the discovery of oil, or discovery of oil and gas in Namibia? And how does that would help you? How does you think, how will you benefit from that? And I left my phone at home. I completely forgot my phone this morning. So yeah, so that's what I wanted to do. So, but you're most welcome to come in. Please do come through, and add your perspective and your. So, what do you think? Also for you as well. What do you think is something that is basically spoken? You know, we're busy speaking about this. There's something, an issue. Maybe I could have actually asked this, you know, I could have asked this, you know. And it's something that we normally we discuss this as well. You come through and we talked about it, is the issue of is it cheaper? I always ask this, and sometimes it has become difficult actually getting. I don't know why it was different when you have people from previous administration. It was easy getting people actually. Very good morning. Welcome to Unpacking the Day.
Morning, Mike.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm fine, man. How are yourself?
Fine, thank you.
Yeah, tinapungu mepoidi omumbera mo studio nde haitai dimini mayange man.
Oh! Nde, ya kupatai kebo studio kinyande ya tu. Atu wachina mbena.
Nda pumbwa kuya kukuka kunyaku nimbano taashukwa kui.
I think it's better when the rain has been so raining and
yeah.
Maybe it could be some marungula.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. All right.
So, no, thank you very much for having heard from Kanjo Kankwa Nyoka.
Yeah.
Yeah, for us, we are used to that Kanjo Kankwa Nyoka. The name.
Yeah, no, we're looking at the article that he's written as Nino Menavari. So, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Maybe he's now getting into that. But I can do, the names are all perfect.
Yeah.
So now, thank you very much for that interview.
Mm.
And I maybe for me, just to come in and say, fine, our participation. If it's just a mere participation, then that's not a good thing enough.
Yeah.
We want to ensure that our participation really brings issues on the table. And maybe controlling, leading and controlling.
Yeah.
Those concepts are very critical. Because you have them to make sure that people are participating.
Mm.
Are people getting into the entry point?
But the other things in terms of participation, do we have the capacity actually to participate? And how do we then, if we don't, where do we need to start to bring us to that level where we can then participate?
Capacity building, participation, I think, require majorly on capacity building. Mm. And now you need to look at the critical a mass of skill. So for you now to have them at a go,
yeah,
may be not possible, but the process of building capacity, empowering them, so that even when they, like you said, the participation of those in green are dredging,
yeah,
how they really strategize and make sure perhaps that, yes, there are beneficiations that you can be trickled down to our people. I think it's also important. But then how do we ensure that people are participating? It's by leading and controlling.
Yeah.
Overseeing, monitoring and evaluating and see how people are really, whether they are really participating or they are just merely being there.
Mm.
So because this participation has got a lot of components and there are different types of participation. So which one is it that we are now getting in? If it is, for example, to negotiate for a deal and ensure that the value addition is way to go, then your participation in kind of that dialogue and is to make sure that, yes, you are getting the benefit, people are there and making decisions that benefit the country. So I think many a times maybe they were not participating, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe there was nobody who was supervising them, coordinating their participation or their effort in there. And even to build the capacity now that they are able to sustain some of those programs.
Mm.
So participation, I think it requires some kind of strong leadership.
Yeah.
Because many people who participate in those things are really technocratic people, technocrats.
Yeah.
They are well equipped with maybe education and whatever, or maybe not enough. They could always be looking at the competency of those ones. But maybe they're not participating enough because there was no leadership overseeing and monitoring.
Mm.
So in the operation, they might be there. Like we have heard when they were talking about the parliament, they heard with, how Honorable Swartboy was talking and the Minister of Finance was answering. And so they're supposed to be there and they are saying they were participating in some of these operational plans and all these strategies and things like that. But maybe there is also a need because that will be an institution on its own.
Yeah.
So, and the people who are there to manage and day-to-day activities shouldn't be the minister. Of course, the president. The president will be there to also do the
quick, there's a quick commission coming up and then you can round off, yeah?
Okay. Mm.
Imba ya rire ombwa nai epetla weather kwa ombu nikiro ombe ombi hukusha. Onjivi royo ye irire ombupu o hakaane na wina ikare no matha kwa murungu wa indu. Weli rongere kusha umune ondengu ukuura kwa imba. Una ovi ume vya peke kwa ondola mirongo vitatu na hambu umwe mumwe. So, tuika ovingi no kukara norupa ondando ya peke yukia nja oshimariva. Olo peresente dano kumyeze vitatu moshimariva. Olo peresente umurongo kumyeze hambu umwe moshimariva. Olo peresente umirongo ivari na dano. Pamiyedi ya mulongwa na vivari moshimarifu. Nitooro rela ondengu jima yu ungura na wakove na wina onyano kife. Ashiesho imba ke kupe oshimariva shishihina omarifiro. Imba o maoronga neno uye uhaka enina. Itako na wina rishangita jinon.
Omutiha kutekiro kaguna I.
Alright. Yeah, you may round off then, yeah. Mm.
Yeah, what I'm saying is just that you, I see no really contradiction in terms of mending, in terms of transportation, railway is very important. I don't know, but they are still going to complement each other.
Mm.
Trans-Namib and this railway that they are talking about. But what matters now, what type of product or service are you going to transport into those roads? Because if you allow, think in the Trans-Namib, unit is revamped and things like that.
Yeah.
They still need more volumes and other companies, volumes of, you know, products to be transported to that corridor that they are talking about. I think let them just be complementary to each other.
All right.
Yes.
All right. Thanks for coming through.
Of course, sir.
Oh, 0833-66091, 0833-66099. You're most welcome to come through. And we're looking at, you know, what can we learn from other producing countries, other oil producing countries in Africa. We looked at Equatorial Guinea, and the lessons, I think the lessons that we can learn from Equatorial Guinea is that without transparency and institutional safeguard, oil wealth concentrates in a very few hands, and it doesn't trickle down, it doesn't transform the economy, and it enriches a small circle while majority of people actually see absolutely nothing. And I bring in Botswana as well as an example of negotiating a fair deal with mining companies. 50-50, the 50-50%, the 50-50 partnership that kept significant value in the country. So, and also with that, they created the what they call the Pula Fund, Sovereign Wealth Fund, that invests the diamond revenues for now for the future generations. And I think what we can learn from Botswana was just to say what we can learn from Botswana is good governance, that good governance matters more than the resources itself. So it's not just about you have it. Okay, let's go to the caller quickly.
A very good morning.
Welcome to. Okay, we lost that one, and it's quite painful in my ear. So do please come back.
Very good morning. Welcome to Unpacking the Day.
Bom dia, família.
Ah, como está?
Ah, muito bom. Boa chuva, boa vida. Não, boa vida, não.
É muito bem, né?
Yeah, muito bom, muito bom.
Muito bom.
Yeah.
So, how are you, man? You good?
I'm doing fine, thank you, my brother. And how are you?
I'm all right, yeah.
That's good to hear. I just would like to ask a question.
Yeah.
You know, we are now in the deal of the green hydrogen, the petrol, the whatever. Now, my question is like, are we in the table or are we in the menu?
Are we in the?
Menu.
The first question, what was the first, are we in?
Are we really in the table to negotiate what we need to ask to for our country?
Yeah.
Or are we in the menu?
So what do you think? Where are we?
I'm still confused. I don't know where we. I don't know whether we are in the negotiation or we are in the menu.
No, we still actually negotiation. There's still final, what they call the final decision. What is that? The FD, whatever. The final decision. There is still a final decision that need to made in some with some company, you know. So many of them will be done actually this year. So whether they will now continue with the mining, or they don't find, you know, the exploration, what they found that is not viable for it's not financial viable for them to actually continue. So there's still the decision has still need to be made. Yeah, and that's involves a lot of negotiation with our government as well. Yeah.
Yes. We know we are lacking them in terms of experience and know how to do what and B and C. We are still a bit far, but really we need something which also will be proud of it. Like when things are done, we don't want to hear like now we are just having 2%, the 50s, what no.
Yeah.
Like, so which is like, that's like I was just on the menu to be eaten up.
So what do you expect? What is your hope? What are you hoping that would be different compared to other minerals deals that we have?
No, we want at least more benefit. You know, it's not like the way you use the things used to be like 80% is of some other countries. We just getting like 15 or 10. At least we have 1% on that. It's my country. What's my benefit? I know I'm not experienced enough to get that thing, but I'll be there one day. At least I want more benefit so I can create my better schools and so on, you know?
Yeah. But what happened to the, you have investors that coming in and said, look, I'm spending this, I'm spending actually everything, you know, I'm bringing expert, I'm bringing equipment. All you have is actually the minerals under your water, but you know there's nothing you can do because you absolutely have nothing, you know, to get it out. So, and they say, look, it's either 60-40 or it's either, you know, 90-10 or it's nothing. What do you do? And then here now the government think, okay. Well, 10 is still something. 10 still, I can still actually get the tax revenue. I can still get royalties. I can, you know, which would help me actually to deal with the issues of unemployment, create some job here and there. So maybe they think it's better than nothing. Or what do you think?
At least you must look beyond that. First, you must look about not in the security, but on the first, you must look on the trust, because this money you are bringing here is being I create a system for your men to be safe.
Yeah.
For you to come here because you trust. I want to say like trust. You know, for you to come to my country to put your money in my bank's accounts because you trust my system.
Mm.
You know, you must also come to this kind of, you must also look on this kind of things and say, okay. What about the, on this system? If I'm looking here on the mines, what about the system I have, which are your money secure?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, but you look everywhere. Don't just look in one thing. Look everywhere.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
Go ahead.
For example, I think 2 weeks ago, we heard about like Namibia's in the green light.
Mm.
They're out of this mess of money laundering and whatnot. But
yeah.
At least myself, that single from my should be counted. Because for you to come here, you put your money is be safe. And I create a system at my own.
Mm.
For you to, yeah, now, at least we know, I'm looking on the mining system, but it's something I can gain on. I don't have to get like 2% on my property.
Yeah. Now imagine you have a neighbor who have the tractors, who have the equipment now to be able to, you know, to plow your field. And you have absolutely now, you're asking, you know, and he said, well, for me to be able to plow in your field, help, you know, plow your field, you know, this is how much I'm going to take. And it's a give and take whether you take that or not. Now, you either left with the field that is unplowed, or you just said, okay, it's better than nothing, isn't it? Where maybe sometime where you think that maybe our government are cornered in that way and just agree with something to get something out of it.
Yes. Still a good thing. But overall, I don't want to be on the menu to be eaten up. I want to be in the negotiations table.
Yeah.
Yes, I want like yes. We. It's not like I want like I'm gonna get 90%. It's okay.
Yeah.
Let us stop. Let us negotiate. It's my land.
Yeah, but it's doable. I was just giving an example of Botswana, who actually make a 50-50 partnership deal with a diamond company.
Yeah.
Because I'm looking at the lesson learned from other countries, And yeah. I'm just looking, it is doable. Maybe we are just bad at negotiation.
and you know what makes you feel like disappointed?
Yeah.
If you look the quality of the Botswana's diamonds,
yeah,
and you look at Namibian diamonds, Namibian is top white from the water. So meaning like, if you have like a 50 kg of diamonds in Botswana, I have a cup of tea for my diamonds, I'll make more money. And you're going to head like, no, Namibia is just getting 20%. Why?
Yeah.
What's the problem? What's the problem there?
Yeah, that's the question that we should be, you know, posing on our negotiators. Why are we getting less in our deals than others? Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. So really, I'm tired of being on the menu. I want to be today in the table. Thank you, my brother.
No, thanks for coming through. Eh?
Welcome.
All right. Oh, that's painful. 0808-333-66091. So, what is your take on the issue of oil that we are discussing this morning? Yeah. So, yeah, do come through. Our telephone number is 0833-66091.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's #1 talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's #1 talk radio station.
Omutiha gutekirwa kaguna imatina omjo chikao shafathana na longeshifa ya ejuike moshiwana iye moyao otaingongotisa mwene anageshifa ya Namibia ombitombwa nawa olonjika zeithane na omayaguro nirandithoma yoe yongeshifa yoe okupikira mo Eagle FM Media House ngoe tuende timemeha uka kombanga nena kara omkwashipareki wimwepo yomo programa detu moambo dengera Selma odara hetatu imwe datundatu heari hamano tano oniari Eagle FM the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
All right, welcome back. Welcome, welcome, welcome back. And and you're most welcome to come through and contribute to our topic this morning. And we were looking at the lessons from other countries that are do mining in Africa, and we just look at Equatorial Guinea. I'm still waiting for to get my personal computer that I'm using actually to open, and it's taking some time now. So we looked at Guinea. And we look at it also, and what we have seen is that even if you have resources, but you don't have institutional, you haven't put up the institutional framework to be able to oversight independent institution to oversight the
the oil operations, you run into problem where you have now ministers, who is actually, we're talking about, who was actually a son of the president, you know, you know, spending, you know, spending money like, you know, buying the most expensive car or any, or cars or any, or properties anywhere in the world, okay? So, and it end up that the oil end up in the hands of few elite in some of this country, you know, and yeah, and it didn't triple down to the majority of the people in the country. So, all right. So, yeah. And it's something that we should be learning, I think, as a country. And that's why we're looking at some of these lessons. Should be something that we should be learning from other countries, how they manage their operation, oil operations. All right. Yeah, let's see. How does this goes? Seriously, this is not, okay. All right. Let's go ahead. So the other country that we can look at, is our, it's Nigeria. So let's look at Nigeria as well. So as I said, Botswana, I bring in Botswana just to, you know, as to learn that a good governance matter. It matters more than the resource itself. So because it's about what you have. It's not about what you have in your ground, but it's about what you do with the revenue when it come, when now it start, when it start flowing. You know, when the revenue starts flowing, what do you do with that? And we... this is the learning we actually getting from Botswana. That's why I bring it. Now, let's go to the country that have oil. So, for example, Nigeria. Let's talk about Nigeria. And this is a big one. The Africa largest oil producer. And they have been pumping oil since the 1950s, I think. Yeah, since the 1950s. And we are talking about hundreds of billion of dollars in oil revenue over decades. And surely Nigeria must be an economic powerhouse right now, isn't it? So now, and here's the reality. Here's the reality. Despite all that oil wealth, Nigeria struggled with poverty. It still struggled with poverty. It still struggled with unemployment, unequal infrastructure, and a chronic electricity shortages, energy shortages. So the oil-rich, even the region itself, the oil-rich Niger Delta, okay, where the oil actually come from, is, we learn that it's environmentally devastated and sees little benefit actually from the wealth extracted from beneath it. So environmentally devastated, and it doesn't see much of the oil that is coming from there. So the other thing that is very prominent or prevalent in Nigeria is corruption. You know, billion of dollar have disappeared. You know, yeah.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
All right. So welcome back. So, yeah, we're talking about the in Nigeria that corruption has been prevalent as well. Billion have disappeared into private pockets, and oil wealth created, you know, what is commonly known as a resource curse, where the economy became dangerously dependent on one commodity. So neglecting the other sector like agriculture and manufacturing. So, but with Nigeria, but here's what is important in actually Nigeria. So Nigeria is not only simple. It's not only a simple story of failure. It's not just simple story of failure. They have learned painfully lessons and made, you know, some reform. There has been some reform that that have been made. They created the Nigerian sovereign investment authority. This is what's meant now to manage excess oil revenues, and they passed the Petroleum Industry Act in 2021, completed to reform the sector. So they are trying to diversify. They're also now trying to diversify. And I said, this is like they learn after what they have gone through. So they are trying now to diversify the economy. But this reform came after decades of mismanagement. And, well, when the damage has been done already, when the damage is quite deep. So I think the lesson from Nigeria, the lesson is very critical from Nigeria. It's that oil dependence without economic diversification is dangerous, you know, and it's something that we talk about. We keep talking about it. We keep talking about diversification. But, you know, let me smell that diversification. What are the diversification activities that we see, that we can touch, that we can smell, that we can, you know, leak, use all our senses? What are those? So because when oil prices, and this country have learned from this, when oil prices crash, for example, and they do repeatedly, your entire economy crashes with it. So Nigeria boom and bust, you know, cycle have caused enormous economic pain. So, yeah, before we go to Angola, let's go to a caller. Good morning. Good morning. Welcome to Unpacking the Day. I can't hear you. Your voice is too low. Yeah, now better. Okay, yeah, but we can hear you a little better, yeah.
Okay. Natural resource is beneficial or benefiting. It's not easy because the not corruption even.
Yeah.
The greedy, yeah. There is a greedy that is between the development and the support.
Mm.
So those are where the grid are playing a big role to not see what the government investment, what is the support from those big companies are developing because of those. So I don't know why we are confusing ourselves for saying, yeah, there are corruption. No, corruption is when you do a corruption, you might end up be arrested.
Yeah.
But in a greedy way, you are not easy.
You're still within the system.
Yeah, you're still within the system. And yeah, that is what happened to many countries and even to Namibia, if you look at it, what is happening from the 1920s up to 1960s, when the government was supporting itself, when the ground monitoring what they are doing, they were setting up a lot of crash pen in the region, they were setting up a water point where you can see that there are new infrastructure there.
Yeah.
But when now the government in 1990, when it came in, the government put up their representatives, those who are now greedy people.
Yeah.
Yeah. You see, the budget was approved into developing something, but all of a sudden you will not see physically what has happened to that project.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, yeah. Those are now the greedy we are talking about, and that is what happened to Nigeria. So the money has supported those guys, and they are paying a lot of money to clean up where they are met. But when you contracted those companies, they don't do anything. And that is what's happening also to the donors. If you look at what the card change in the United States of saying, we are hiring the companies to go distributing or supporting other countries.
Yeah.
But when they come here, they come with as a multi-millionaire people. They are driving in a nice car. They are not supporting people. They are just monitoring and do a long speech for what America has been. But what Americans want, they don't do that.
Mm.
That is what now they cut it off. And that is what we are expecting from this oil industry. Not the richer got richer, because they are the one that is representing those.
Yeah.
Or they are the one that is distributing those funds. So it's not easy. The Africa needing to look at what is saying. Because let us get rid of this corruption thing. Because corruption is finding people are going to jail. But greedy do never.
Mm-hmm.
And that is where the problem is. That's where guys think people they don't understand what they are talking about. This greedy thing. Because it's the one that is we never develop. But if you want to see that mind, if you look at when the book was handed over from the colonial era to the Bulu, Noma May rest in peace.
Yeah.
There was a lot of school that was constructed.
Yeah.
But it's a ghost school. You understand?
Mm.
It's a ghost school. It was not there. The clinic, they were taking the building up a clinic. South African government knows that no, we're developing the country.
Yeah.
But when the government is sending to see those schools, they were not school constructed.
Mm.
What is that? Is it corruption or is it greed? Is it greed?
Yeah.
Because those money were going through the kings and queens. They were the one that is giving the report that, you know, we have people that walk a long distance. Yeah, from here you need maybe to put up a
hall. Yeah.
Yeah. They give the money. Because remember, these people, they were too much care. They told them that you don't need to send in government people to that area. They might end up picking something. So give us the money who are cooperating with them
to
do the development. And they are benefiting to become richer. Because if you look at them, it's the same if you look at the ministers that are making millions of dollars from the government. They do the same. So I think because of the time, maybe it needed to be elaborated more, but that is what, forget about corruption. Corruption is, you'll be arrested. Those people that are doing corruption, they are pushing by APC. But greedy people, that they are denying others opportunities.
Yeah.
They don't be arrested.
It's a different concept maybe that we need to look at here. Mm.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Thanks for coming, Tria. All right. Mm. Oh, yeah. That brings us to the end of our episode of our Monday episode of Unpacking the Day. So, yeah, there have been a couple of lessons that I wanted to bring in. The Angolan lessons, we could have looked at also the Ghana. There's also lessons we could have learned from Ghana experience. And that's actually from my side because my facilities were actually not cooperating. But I also wanted to look at Norway. Norway, you know, as a good example of how one can really make use of these resources. Yeah, so, yeah. Yeah, let me just wrap up a little bit that every single African producing country we have discussed had opportunity really to do things right, and every single one had an example to learn from. So, and every single one had advisors, expert, as Nino said, and framework available. So, yet most of them squandered much of their oil wealth. You know why? Because oil money create powerful incentives for greediness, as just the caller said, for corruption. You know, because short-term political, sometimes because of short-term political pressures, override long-term planning. And because institutions prove weaker than we hope. So because, and maybe that's why the president also decided, okay, I want to oversee this, because the institution, the ministry could, it proves weaker than what we hoped. So, and the human nature inclines toward immediate gratification, immediate greedy, rather than delayed benefit for the whole community or for the whole people. So Namibia is not special. We are not special. We are not magically immune to these pressures that other countries went through or are going through. If we think or what that won't happen here, so then definitely we are setting ourselves up for exactly the same failures. So the resource curse isn't about the resource. It's about how society respond to sudden wealth, like in our case. So, yeah, the question is whether the whole question is about do we have the political maturity in first place, the institutional strength, and the collective will now. As we said, as Nino said, we are the one who drive the agenda. Do we have the collective will to make difficult choice? The audacity that he was talking about, to make difficult choice. Will we save most of our oil revenue for future generation or spend them now? Will we invest in productive capacity? Or consumption? Will we spend it on consumption? And will we maintain transparency or allow deals to happen in the shadows, you know, in the shadow of this fancy building? So will we diversify our economy, something that we're speaking all about every day, or become dangerously dependent on oil? Well, so yeah, those are some questions that we really need to deal with and drive the dialogue, the national dialogue, and you and I have the responsibility to do that as well. So, yeah, let me leave you in a good hands of Tate France coming up now with Kwetha Mosha, and wish you a very good listening throughout the day on for other programs that are coming your way today. It's a raining day, and hopefully you are safe wherever you find yourself. Let me just wish you the best productive day and a week ahead. So let's do this tomorrow again at the same time, from 8 o'clock to 10 o'clock. So from me, Michael Chevalier, goodbye.